Hello, and welcome to the Do Gooder Leader Interview Series, conversations with today's leaders about the what and how of leadership in the real world. This is Hannah Cooper, and I'm a leadership and team coach at hannahcooper.com. And today I'm so pleased to be with Leah Goldstein-Moses as our first interview in this series. I was saying to Leah before we got started today that I've been thinking about doing something like this, these interviews with amazing leaders that I have had the pleasure of interacting with out in the real world. And Leah's agreed to be my first interview, so yay! just a little background on Leah, and then we'll get to hear from her today too. Leah is the president and CEO of the Improve Group. Which I love how you talk about your work, Leah, but, you know, broadly does research and evaluation, but the mission really being to help nonprofit and public sectors to make better use of information and find creative data-supported ways to answer questions. I've known Leah for a number of years now. We've had the privilege of working together in a couple of projects, but Leah's recognized as an expert in evaluation, community-based research, planning programs and services, and engaging stakeholders, and I've seen her do all those things in lots of amazing ways. And since 2000, she's worked on or supervised over 120 evaluations, strategic plans, and original research projects. And she's worked with large and small organizations in local, multi-state, and international initiatives. Her passion and commitment to community improvement drives her to continued success in implementing evaluation strategies and finding creative, pragmatic ways to answer challenging questions. And I've certainly seen her do those in many different situations. So, thank you so much, Leah, for being willing to have this conversation with me today.
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm really excited to hear your point of view, too, and have the conversation.
Great. So Leah, I've, you know, kind of given your formal bio here, but I'd love to hear from you, you know, in your own words. Talk a little bit about, give us a little overview of the work that you find yourself doing, and just a little bit about kind of how you found your way to this kind of work, and maybe even founding an organization.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was reflecting on this question and thinking about at the core of the work I do is that I am a believer in people and a believer in communities, and a kind of just a believer that people working together can solve hard problems and make things better. And so what I, and then my special talent is thinking about how can information and ideas and insights really help make that whole process better. So as I came to the work of evaluation and strategic planning and research, I really wanted to bring this talent I had for taking information and analyzing it and drawing insight to this belief I had about how people work together and the fact that so many of us are motivated by just really making a difference for the people we care about and for our broader communities.
You know, I love how you said that the combination for you, sort of that sweet spot, was talent plus belief.
Yeah.
That's so interesting because, it really ties back to, you know, that some of this has come so naturally out of just really who you are as a person.
Right, absolutely. And I don't know, Hannah, we've known each other for a few years, but I don't know if I ever shared with you that I think so much of it started way younger than I would even ever usually talk about my professional career. I use talents that I developed from really watching my parents. My dad is a systems analyst and has always been very analytical. And then both my parents together have been very committed to community service. And so kind of seeing them model that and then being part of circles that used a lot of analysis and also really wanted to make a difference, I think influenced me from a very young age.
Yeah, it sounds like two really important drivers in terms of, what you saw as a young person and then really interesting combination of both that drive for analysis and for that impact, which just really does make me think of the work that you do.
Yeah.
So when you think about actually also even starting your own company, how did you decide to do that? Because I know that's something I know some people think about, you know, in terms of being an entrepreneur or taking that step from, you know, doing the work to also really driving the work.
Right. So there were a couple of factors that really led me to found the company. And again, I have to credit other people a lot. One of the factors was is when I first started being interested in how evaluation and analysis can make a difference, there weren't a lot of established programs or resources that were doing that work. There were some, but they, many of them were out of state or in different communities, and they weren't necessarily doing just what I wanted to do. It was a fairly emerging field. And another factor was that I had great mentors who were doing consulting in different sectors and with different focus areas, but I really got to observe those mentors in their work and how they were able to bring their clients further along in whatever path they were assisting with. So, for example, I worked for a transportation planner, and she worked with community organizations on helping them think about connecting transit and transportation solutions to the people in their community who most needed them. And I got to interact with other consultants who did similar work with their clients. And I thought, oh, maybe there's something here. Maybe there's a pathway for me to start doing some consulting in this sweet spot that I love of taking analysis to community people and helping them use that information to really serve their communities.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, so certainly, you know, your family background, you talked a little about mentors. It sounds like also them having the ability to kind of see an opening or an opportunity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in addition to seeing an opportunity, I would say that I also hit consulting at a time when risk was an option in my life. I was just out of graduate school. I was I had very few commitments. I was engaged but didn't have a husband or children yet. So it was a time in my life where I could take a risk and really just see where consulting took me. I don't know, you know, now with a mortgage and two kids, if I would take the same risk. It's
right.
A really different time in my life than it was at the time.
Well, that's a great point that sometimes it is also really about timing and how does
right.
it kind of fit with an overall life plan. And I
right.
see that a lot with people that sometimes we can think that it's, you know, that it is kind of, sometimes I think we have a misperception that we kind of just get on a train and sort of march forward with leadership or plans. And sometimes it's also about what does fit with the rest of our lives.
Right.
Yeah, right. Great. So when you think about, because, you know, one of the things in addition to your work, you know, the concrete work that you do, I also really think of you as a really tremendous leader. Leah, and I'm curious about in terms of, and sometimes I know leaders don't necessarily think of themselves in that way, but or we can get a little shy about that or claiming that role, but when you think about how you've kind of developed your own leadership skills, whether it's, you know, the risk to take, you know, take the leap and start your own company or how you've led projects or even leading your organization now, how for you, what's been your path towards developing yourself as a leader, would you say?
Oh, that's such a great question. And I would say it's a path that's ongoing because for every success that I have where I think, oh, I just nailed that, or I really am so proud of this thing that I've done, there's another time that I'm beating myself up and wishing I would have handled something differently. So it is for sure an ongoing path. So, So I would say let me think about how it started.
Yeah.
There have been a few key times in the past that were really pivotal to how I think of myself as a leader and about the roles of leaders. One of them is in my position of working with organizations, I am so fortunate to get to see so many different leaders. And there have been styles of leadership that have really, really resonated with me. And I would describe that style as a very empowering and inclusive style. I think as a leader that I definitely have talents and I like to put my talents to use, but I recognize that there are people all around me, whether they be my clients, whether they be other community members, or whether they're my staff, who have their own talents. And I want to make sure that they have opportunities to shine and use those talents. I saw really effective leaders that I interacted with doing that, not having to, you know, really micromanage everything and take control of everything, but opening up space for other people's talents to shine. Mm-hmm. And then actually my work with you, Hannah, really helped me think about that a lot more as not just a sort of an informal way of how I behave, but really something that really at the core describes who I am as a leader and what I want my leadership to be and say about me and my company and about the work that I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like so both observing, sort of, again, seeing what kind of styles kind of worked and resonated for you. And then it also sounds a bit like also then just really knowing what that style was for you.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that there have been times, and this goes to the point that I made as well about it being an ongoing process, where once I recognized that style, it worked a lot of the time, but there are times when it doesn't. So, for example, if I, you know, my value and my philosophy is to be very empowering of others, and yet at the same time, there's times when people do want me to step in and provide a lot more mentorship or guidance or structure for them, and that's been difficult for me to do. I've had to think about how to do so in a way that fits my values and fits my style, but is also offering the support that that those people have needed at the time.
Right, right. Yeah, so it's so true that it sounds like, you know, we can't just have one. We may have a preferred style, but also noticing how does our style fit with other people, and also what does the situation call for. That
right.
When we have a more facilitative style, there is sometimes a time to, and it may be uncomfortable, to be able to kind of call it out or make a concrete decision with people.
Right,
yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I think there's one other thing that as long as we're talking about leadership, there's one thing that I've been thinking about lately, and that is, you know, sometimes when you are leading, who you are leading is much more important than your purpose for leading.
Mm.
So
Say more about that.
Yeah, so I was reflecting, there was a time probably 5 or 6 years ago when it seemed like every one of my clients was reading the book Good to Great. And there's a sub little pamphlet that goes with it about Good to Great for the nonprofit sector.
Yeah.
And the book has a lot of different points in it, but one of the points is get the right people on the bus, essentially wherever your train is going, make sure that the right people are there to get you where you want to go. And I, you know, I've reflected on that over the years and thought about the right people and who the right people are. And the more my own life has gotten increasingly complicated and, you know, needing of a lot of orchestration, the more I realize that no one is perfect. And so if you're always looking for the perfect person for the perfect job, you're setting yourself and that person up for failure.
Yeah.
And instead, if you're thinking about what is this person's unique talent and unique contribution, and what does that suggest to me about where I should be going or where we can go as a team, I think that just feels like a much more comfortable spot to me and more authentic about where people are and how you achieve kind of amazing things.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point, because sometimes we don't really we can't always choose who's on the bus.
Right.
So sometimes we have to take who's on the bus and create from that as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. That's a great point. And so true that no one is perfect, including us, which,
right.
Alas.
Exactly.
But as I often say, perfect is very boring. So,
right.
Know, at least we don't have to worry about that. We won't be boring.
Right.
What else would you say, Leah? Anything else that you would say as you kind of look over, you know, the work you've done and how you think of yourself. Anything else that you would say, point to, that's really influenced you or helped you develop as a leader?
I think one of the things that I'm currently working on is being very honest with people when I have a talent that I can apply to a particular problem, or when something just isn't my talent and I need help. And I think that's something, it's partly just a maturity. You know, when I did first start my company, I was fairly young and had just so much confidence that I could do everything. And as time has gone on, I realized, well, I maybe could do everything, but at what cost? And really, if someone else has a more of a talent in some area, then I should let them shine and do what I'm talented in. So it's something I'm still learning and would love to continue to get better at.
That's great. It also reminds me, even back to even some of your first comments about really harnessing talents with your beliefs, right? It sounds like as you're getting clearer about, well, what are the unique gifts that I can bring to the table here? And then also being able to let go of either what you don't or perhaps can't do at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I also love what you said, because I really think that transparency is a critical leadership skill.
Yeah.
That it's scary, and I think some of the stuff that's come out recently from Brené Brown and the work around that she's been doing around vulnerability, you know, it's an edge for most of us as leaders, because it's not really how we're trained
right.
or thought of in this culture. We can kind of get confused, I think, between transparency and our vulnerability and weakness.
Right.
And I love what you said about help, too, because I often say to people that I think that that asking for help is a really underdeveloped leadership skill also.
Completely. Do you want to hear a funny story about
asking
for help?
I'd love that, yeah.
Okay. So, like I have already said dozens of times, I have a really, really talented team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also someone who is a doer and likes to just kind of move forward. And so one of my big weaknesses is I don't always take the time to think about my team and what they could be contributing, and then what I shouldn't be contributing because I'm just too busy and not giving it the attention it deserves. So it's something that I've struggled with for a long time. And I just decided this week to develop a new strategy. And my strategy is to take 15 minutes every Monday morning and just think, what do I need help with this week? Because there's never going to be a week when I don't need help. But if I'm starting out my framework thinking, what will I need help with? I can so much more effectively empower others to do their work and not be responding at the last minute to things that need more attention than I'm giving them. So I'm going to try the new strategy. I can report back to you in a few weeks about how it's going.
I'd love to hear about it. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I love that. You know, and I think that element of being able to be planful is so important
right.
with leaders, and it's so hard to take that time to step away and kind of be more intentional with our work. So I love that you're framing that even in terms of, how can I ask for help?
Right.
I wanted to be sure, because I think you have said it a couple times and I maybe didn't pick it up soon enough, but I think that a huge part of, I also hear about your leadership is that element of really being able to leverage and acknowledge the skills of the people around you, that you don't have to do it alone, that you're so generous in complimenting and certainly taking the spotlight off yourself, but also noticing that, you know, your success is also, it sounds like you're really, it's built certainly on the experiences you've had, the people who've come before you, as well as the people who you choose to put on your bus.
Right. That is so true. And I do have to acknowledge them and also think about how does each of those people that has contributed and made a difference and really done amazing work, how do they feel success? So, you know, I might feel success in a certain way, whatever that might be, accolades from other evaluators or landing a really big high-profile project, but the people that are so to speak, on my bus that are contributing so much, success to them might feel a little different. And so I need to be made sure that I'm listening to that and giving them opportunities to not just contribute to the success of my vision, but also feel their own successes.
Mm, that's great. How, for you, what's been a tip or suggestion you might have if other people find themselves in the same situation? Like, what are ways that you've found to really draw that out of your staff?
So we do a few different things that are regular and structured, and then a lot of things that are more irregular and ad hoc. So one of the regular structured things we do is we have a retreat with our staff every year. And at that retreat, we open it up for them to set the stage. What do we want to accomplish this year? What's going to feel really good? What will we be proud of at the end of the year? And that's really driven by our staff. And then supporting that are hundreds of conversations throughout the year, from peer to peer, peer to supervisor, across teams, that just say, you know, this feels really good, or this has been a challenge, or I'm very excited to be working on this. So it's an ongoing conversation and an ongoing opportunity for people to voice their own perspectives and preferences and celebrations. Mm-hmm. We are also really, really mindful about acknowledging celebrations. We do things like, for example, when we get a new project, we just started doing something where we ring a gong when there's a new project. Because otherwise, you know, when you have a big enough team, not everybody might know. So we do, you know, we do silly little things to acknowledge the celebrations. We celebrate every birthday with a card and a present, and then we have lots of opportunities to socialize and have fun together. And every time we do that, we're saying, oh, what are you proud of? I was really proud of this. I loved this, or I felt really engaged. Celebration has become a really important part of our culture.
Cool. That's great, and I love, it makes me think anytime I'm in your neighborhood, I'm going to keep my ears open for the gong.
That sounds great.
I love that. And I would really agree. Like, celebration is, I think, a really, again, something that I think sometimes we can sort of put on the back burner and think, well, we'll only save that for special occasions, but it's something I often encourage with clients and folks I work with, just to really think about, you know, how can you really start building celebration in, whether it's at the individual level with peers or colleagues, or really at that team level, because it is that thing of, like, I think as human beings we need rituals.
Yeah.
For how we understand the world, and so building some of those in. I love some of the examples you gave there of how you're doing that both formally and informally. That's great. That's great.
Great.
What lucky staff you have. True. What would you say, Leah? What would you say motivates you when you think about? I mean, you've talked about this already, but what motivates you to kind of stay on this learning path you've kind of talked about?
So there, right now, at this point in my life, there are two really key things that motivate me. The first is when I'm working with one of my clients to see some information or new insight we've brought to them really translate into action. So, for example, we just worked on this really significant project for the state about a program that's emerged over the last few years and needed some more definition and guidance. And we did some great community feedback, we analyzed some data, and we were able to make really clear recommendations for them about how to determine eligibility for the program, how to structure who gets what services, and they're using that to set policy, and that feels awesome, because we know that with that insight, they'll be able to meet the needs of more people and really maintain that program for years ahead as it's continuing to meet the need of Minnesotans. Mm. So that's one thing that really motivates me. And then the second thing is just that I work with such smart people, both my staff and my colleagues, and then the broader evaluation community, and then my clients, the people who work in the organizations. I just love to see them shine, to just get a new insight or take new information and just run with it and use it to really make a difference. I love seeing that spark of creativity and enthusiasm. Mm.
So great. So great. And it's, you know, what you're saying also just reminds me of, you know, when I'm working with teams, we talk about that, you know, really effective teams really harness both insight and action, and mm-hmm. they also really harness that task capacity, that, you know, results. That's why we're all at work, right?
Right.
With that relational aspect. So just hearing that that's part of what energizes you and motivates you, it sounds like a really great self-sustaining place for yourself too.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So when you think about kind of everything you've been up to, and there's so many successes and, you know, learnings and just really almost, I know just even for you, Leah, being an evaluator is just, you know, that mindset kind of permeates your whole being here in terms of always looking for how to do it better and how to learn. But if you could do anything different in your career to date, is there any, what might it be?
So let me start by saying I've made dozens of mistakes in my career, and each of them I learn from, and so most of them I am grateful for those mistakes. I think there's
only one.
And
I love that
one.
You say that because it's so counterintuitive, right? It's like we try to avoid mistakes, and yet they're
right.
Our biggest learnings.
Exactly. There's not a single, like, I can think of some doozies, and I'm really grateful for all of them. So as I was thinking about this question, I think the one thing that I would point to is, it's so interesting that you brought up the lean in conversation and some of the things that's being talked about related to women's leadership lately.
Yeah.
I wish I would have had a more comprehensive perspective of the actual day-to-day, what it's like to be a mom and a wife and a, you know, a daughter and a granddaughter and be a leader at the same time, and then use that to have some really early conversations with my family about how we wanted to structure our family life so that it would be easier to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when my kids were really little, there were a couple of times where I said to my husband, I think a nanny is going to be an easier solution for us than a daycare or preschool. And but I didn't really do like the analysis, and we didn't get very far in the conversation because we were so busy for, you know, just managing the day-to-day craziness of our mm-hmm. lives that we never made the transition. Mm-hmm. And I think looking back, we caused ourselves more stress than we really needed to in our family life. So I wish I would have just paused a little bit more and really had some of those deeper conversations about how we wanted to balance our busy two-career lifestyle with the parenting that we wanted to do for our kids. I wouldn't say it's been a failure. It's just reflecting. I wish I would have done more.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you had advice for someone who was starting out, or if you could almost, you know, jet back in time and talk to that earlier self,
right?
What would you tell her?
So the one thing is, I really do believe that you can have it all, but you just can't have it all at once necessarily. So be thinking about how you imagine your life might unfold. What big events might happen in your life, and how do you want them to unfold? I heard a great, great speaker last week who talked about being really well established in her career, everything going gangbusters, and then finding out she had kind of a miraculous late in life pregnancy that was very unexpected, and having to pause at that moment and think about what kind of parent she wanted to be. So I would suggest to anybody that as they are thinking about their life or facing a big life event, to pause and take the time to imagine and think about what you'd like. How much time do you want to spend traveling? How much time do you want to spend at home? How much, you know, do you want to be a soccer coach or whatever it might be? and then advocate for what you've imagined as your ideal situation. It won't ever be perfect, but at least you've taken the time to articulate and imagine and dream, and then and start thinking about how to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. So great. And I couldn't agree with you more, because I think sometimes we hesitate around allowing ourselves to do that dreaming. Or again, we kind of think that we've got to follow these paths that have already been trodden, because we can't see perhaps another way. And I always encourage people I'm working with to really allow themselves to do a little bit of dreaming, because I often say to people, you know, you're more likely to get what you want if you know what it is.
Right.
So, so even though it may sometimes feel impossible, again, that you're more likely to be able to put those things in place concretely if you allow yourself to, you know, dream about being the soccer coach and the CEO. If you allow yourself to think about all of those things, because there are many more possibilities than perhaps sometimes we imagine. Which is, again, part of the reason why I wanted to do these kinds of conversations, because there's so many amazing models that of people who are trying to balance all these different elements, including yourself, who may never get to, you know, write a book like Sheryl Sandberg. And yet there's some great examples of how to do it. And I so appreciate your willingness to talk a little bit about, you know, maybe ways you could have done it differently or ways you might want to do it differently. Again, not from a place of, you know, so easy to kind of hassle ourselves about our mistakes, but instead looking at that there are opportunities for really understanding what we want more of in our lives.
Right.
So,
and you know, even though I came to that sort of realization a little late to the party, I would say, I think the other benefit of dreaming is it helps you realize what isn't part of that dream. So we talked early in the conversation about service and kind of my observations of what my parents had done and the people in my life. And one of the things my parents had always done is done some board service and leadership service for nonprofit organizations. And so as I started out in my career, I did that as well. I volunteered on boards. I served on a few boards. I led committees. And when I started to really realize that I needed to take the time to dream about how I wanted my life to be, I realized that I wanted to volunteer, but none of my volunteer time did I want to spend in a board meeting. So what I want to spend my time volunteering doing is being the track coach on my kids', you know, community track teams and painting faces at the school carnival. So when I was honest with myself about what I wanted my life to be, I was able to kind of unwind some of my commitments and cut things out of my life that really weren't a right match for my vision and for my dream.
That's great. And such a great example of actually saying no to something.
Right.
How empowering that can be.
Right.
Very difficult at times, but
yeah.
It can really open some things up. Open some things up.
Absolutely.
Oh, Leah, I've so enjoyed this conversation with you. And sort of as we're kind of winding up here, I'm just curious, is there any other advice you would give to someone who is maybe at an earlier stage in their career, whether they're looking at a career of service and contribution and making a difference, or really looking into stepping into leadership roles? What might be your 2 cents for someone who, you know, again, either your younger self or someone who might be in a similar place?
Yeah, I would say that everything we talked about today takes a lot of courage, and it takes courage in different ways. Sometimes it's taking the courage to let go of something, of controlling something that you want to hold on to or that's really important to you. Sometimes it's the courage to have a conversation that might be a little bit uncomfortable or open up a can of worms that you're not quite sure you're prepared to deal with. But recognize those points of courage. And when you have exercised courage, when you've demonstrated courage, take the time to be proud of yourself, because each time gets a little bit easier and builds your bucket a little bit more, contributes a little bit more.
Mm. That's great. Well, I'm just so grateful for your time and your insight today, Leah. I always learn something from you when we connect, and just so grateful for you for being my very first interview, and really sharing your thoughts with so many people who I know are going to benefit from this conversation, as well as I know benefit from the work you do with the Improve Group. So again, thank you. You can find Leah at and her company at theimprovegroup.com, and I really commend you to check out their work because they're up to amazing stuff out in the world. And you'll see Leah, you know, frequently around, at least around in the Twin Cities, and certainly nationally presenting and talking as well. So if you get an opportunity to meet her, I would encourage you to do so because she's an inspiring person all the way around from both her work and as a person, as you, I hope, have been able to hear today. So thank you again, Leah, and again, thanks for everyone for being willing to join this this conversation and this dialogue today. So again, thanks again. This is Hannah Cooper from hannahcooper.com, and we'll hear and see you, well, maybe not see you, but hear you next time. All right, thanks.